Institute and our friend Dr. Bill Parker, the man who talks about how to secure the 21st century in 600 pages, which is, you know, guaranteeing America's security. A great book for you, and a former naval commander. First, let me say this, Bill. I, you know, being out there at PACOM and just seeing this all, it made it even a little bit more tangible that we're paying closer attention to that region of the world.
Well, we absolutely are, David. First of all, it's great to be back on your show again. PACOM is paying very close attention to this. The administration is, and the world is right now. This is a big deal. The fact that we are looking at North Korea seriously and engaging them in a different way than we have before, you and I have discussed this before, that we're keeping all the instruments of national power on the table. The fact that on one side we're saying we're willing to talk to you, we're willing to start working things like bringing the remains back, but at the same time we still have that military capability over there if things don't go the way we expect them to go.
Well, the talk and action component of this, in other words, we'll talk, and Secretary Pompeo will go into that in a moment. He's very engaged. Matter of fact, I think we're actually seeing shuttle diplomacy come back in some ways to that office, and that goes back to the Cold War and, you know, the shuttle diplomacy that went on between Europe and the Middle East and Russia, communist bloc. And it seems as if this time, and maybe, you know, I could be off on this because we don't know everything coming out of North Korea or what will come, but I think they get a sense from what I'm seeing in the reports that they need to act, and we need to see some tangible action, not just the six-party talks and talk and talk.
No, that's absolutely right. You're seeing the talk, but you're also seeing activities happen. I mean, as we speak, there are generals from North Korea and South Korea that are meeting and continue to meet to talk about moving artillery pieces out of the DMZ. They're actually talking about eventually turning it into a big forest. They're talking about removing some of the mining capabilities out of that area. And then the bigger issues, of course, are removing the missiles and removing the nuclear capability.
The one thing you can't remove in this is the knowledge that's there. Well, the only way it happens is if it's somehow deleted or not passed on, but that exists. So in this process, and as the secretary goes there and the various teams, the generals meet the North and South Korean leaders, the Japanese have an interest in this as well, and of course China. What are some of the ways you can approach that?
Yeah, so you know, you and I have talked about weapons of mass destruction in the past, chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and high-yield explosives. When you look at those and you look at the chemical and biological side of the house, that's all about the knowledge, because it's very easy to come up with some of those assays, et cetera, to support the chemical and the biological side of the house. But when you're talking about nuclear, you need the fissile material. And so more than knowledge, it is the material itself that is important here. So it's tracking that fissile material and tracking those other capabilities that allow you to have the missile capability to deliver it.
When the administration approaches this, and there is a multifaceted strategy being played out here, the verification is important. And that's been a challenge before, whether through the IAEA, UN groups, or in some way. You know, how do you put this team together, and should the U.S., should we take it on and say our inspectors are the ones that are going to be involved in this? That way the administration maintains a level of control over that part of it.
Yeah, it's trust but verify, going back to the Reagan days, and that's where we're at right now. It's we want to trust the fact that you're going to tell the truth, that you're going to do what you say you're going to do, but we need to verify that, and we need to have a clean inspection process. And this has been part of the challenge with the JCPOA when you talk about the Iran deal, is that the verification was a real issue there. And so when you're talking about verification, it means you have to have the right people on the ground, and it has to be people that you trust. IAEA has done a very good job in a variety of areas, but quite frankly, having our own team on the ground, our own intelligence people that we can task and we can trust is very important here. So I think you have to have our guys on the ground.
I think there has to be some control from our side, because in the past, The method of verification, and the UN tends to at times not have a, what I would call a good structure in their plan. Who provides the samples? Who verifies? There have been so many issues over time with them, and even the IAEA that has come out and said, well, they lied, whoever that they are, be it Iran or others. So that's why I asked the question, who needs to be in charge of this?
Right, and the UN has its own challenges. They don't have the structure in place. They don't have the resources, quite frankly, to put the right forces in place and the right technical support in place. They certainly have a lot of good people, no doubt about that. But the U.S. government has the right people to go in and do these kinds of assessments. And by the way, that's not Republican or Democrat. That is the right people that we can put on the ground, and we have a lot of experts in this country to do that.
So next steps, likely, is South Korea going to get more engaged in this? I mean, they already have been. President Moon has talked about various forms of meetings they plan to. As a paper that I believe they've signed, say they're going to officially end the conflict. And even in that aspect, ending the conflict, going from an armistice to an end to war, does that open the door for other international actions? Because there's a component there.
I think it does help open the door up, as you're talking about. But more importantly here, we've got to go back to the process that's in place. You know, you're applying all those instruments of national powers we've talked about. So the conversations are happening, the inspections. We have now are waiting for the list. And that list is important. Once we know what list they're going to provide, saying these are all the nuclear facilities we have, these are all the missile facilities we have, then the United States and our friends and allies will then compare that with what we know. What they don't know, the North Koreans, is what we know. And so then we compare our list of this is what we know, where certain facilities are, et cetera. We compare that to what they provide. And if they match, then we say, okay, they're giving us the true list here. They're being honest about it. And then we start the removal process. So I think that's the process. The next steps really is to get that list and then move forward while you have the conversations happening.
What about the possibility of different factions forming in North Korea as this goes forward? You've got the leadership that has been there in part since Kim Jong-un's father. He recently removed three top military commanders. But is there a possibility, and how much do we know, is there a way to identify factions that may form, including the possibility of hardliners within North Korea? Because I guess the question is there a danger of North Korea fracturing within on this issue?
Well, there's always a danger when you have a dictatorship like this where it will fracture within, as you're talking about. The reality is that you have a relatively small percentage of the country that are the elites. And they are going to be the people, whether it continues to be the Kim regime or others. It's that elite group. They're well-educated, they're well-resourced, et cetera, that will continue to run that country. As far as fracturing goes, I don't see that happening in the near future. I mean, China's put a lot of pressure on North Korea, as have the Russians, the Americans, South Korea, and even Japan. So I think that you will see that they will stay together as a unit. How they change will be in question.
All right, you just brought China into it. See, you're ahead of me again, Bill, because China played strong in the beginning, I guess, if you want to, that's what I call it, with us. Then they pull back. They continue to feed and fuel in some ways, and in some ways that's necessary because there are people living there who literally may not be alive if they're not fed and fueled. So what about China? What's your assessment of China from the beginning of this process with this administration to now?
I think all of the major players understand that the big loser out of this, if conflict erupts, I'm talking about war now, is China. And China also realizes this. And the reason I say that is because 90% of all the goods and services go by sea. If you have major combat operations, it means that those goods and services are not going to flow by sea, at least for the short term. And therefore, it's going to impact their economy with questionable strength on their private banking. That could significantly impact China's banking system very quickly. And so that is just one of the many reasons. Also, conflict could end up with massive refugees going into their country, and they're watching what happened to Turkey after Syria, and they don't want to see that happen in China. So China realizes they could be the big losers if conflict erupts, so it is in their best interest to get rid of these nuclear weapons too, because the United States is very clearly not going to back off on this one. It's either the nukes go away or we're going to come in and take them. I mean, that's what it sure is sounding like to me. Right. And so there are lots of options to prevent that. But at the end of the day, China, I think, now realizes that this president is very serious about getting rid of the nukes on the peninsula.
Well, it's not just that. It's we have a president, as I see it, who's willing to play the leverage game, whether it be tariffs, economic power, economic negotiations. And that seems to be developing more as a doctrine. Let me, this administration, the president, apply strength, leverage, use it, renegotiate, because these are some of these factors matter. They can, I don't know, maybe they don't bring China into full compliance, but they certainly push them in the right direction.
No, that's right. And remember, you and I have had this conversation off air before, but if you start looking at the ripple effect here, that if North Korea is allowed to remain nuclear, then South Korea will likely go nuclear. Japan has said they will go nuclear, which impacts China, because China is going to look at a nuclear Japan and say, well, we have to increase our capabilities. And while all this is happening, Iran sees that North Korea, quote, got away with it, unquote. And then Iran goes nuclear, and the Middle East is out of control very quickly on nuclear weapons. So there is more to play here than just North Korea having nuclear weapons. Not that that's not enough, but this ripple effect that very quickly will impact not only that region, but the Middle East is significant.
Well, imagine a nuclear arms race in the Middle East, a nuclear arms race in the Indo-Pacific region. We've already got India, Pakistan, now you have China, Japan. Yeah, doesn't sound good. One issue that's been brought up, and some reporting's come out on this, is on North Korea's continuing build of ballistic missile systems. What's, I don't know, true and what's not?
Yeah, I don't know what's true and what's not true as far as the intelligence world did. And if I did, I wouldn't tell you anyway. But but the reality is this. When you're dealing with another country, you're not going to stop instantly all those things that you've been doing for 30, 40, 50 years.
Yeah, I didn't expect Kim to go, hey, look, guys, you got me. I'm going to stop
right here.
We're
going to shut everything down. I think even if it was in his full intent to shut down his nuclear weapons program, it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take a while to get there. It's going to take a while to get out to these different organizations and say, okay, you have 90 days to shut this down safely. Because remember, when you start talking about liquid fuel weapons, when you start talking about missiles of that capacity, there's a safety factor in there, too, to shut these down properly. Now, I'm not saying that's what's happening. Maybe they are increasing. I just don't know.
Right.
But the reality is it's not going to be an instantaneous shutdown. You turn the switch and everything stops.
Yeah. There's also what do you do with what you have.
What do you do with the destruction material. There. Exactly.
And on the issue of liquid fuel, that's been brought up also, because that's a longer process even to fuel, to send up a missile, an ICBM in some form. So is that a factor here, what can be done with, or is there other uses for this?
No.
Or are there, to use the proper English term?
I mean, you could certainly say that these missiles could be used to put satellites in space, et cetera. I mean, there are lots of other things you could use these type of missiles for. But the reality is this is for their weapons system. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So how you shut those down and how quickly you shut those down is very important here.
All right, so next steps. Bill Parker is now sitting in the chair, and the world is listening. Patriot audience is listening. What do you say to the people out there who need to understand this process better? The reporting only does so much, and we're doing an extended segment here to give everyone a better sense of what's going on. But people play a role in our government. We vote our government in, and there is a lot of tension out there about what to support and what policies to support.
Right. So if I'm sitting in the chair, I'm saying we need to apply all those instruments of national power, first of all. We need to continue the shuttle diplomacy efforts that we're doing right now. We need to continue to flow information back and forth, both publicly and privately, between ourselves, North Korea, and quite frankly, the rest of the world on what we're doing, not just on what we're doing right now, but what the impacts are if we don't have a denuclearized peninsula. From a military perspective, it needs to be very clear that the military options are still on the table. From an economic and financial perspective, we need to continue to make it clear that you will suffer and suffer more mightily if you don't remove those nuclear weapons. The intelligence needs to continue on a regular basis, and that is happening clearly. So I think that is the first step, is to make sure all those instruments of national power are used. And then beyond that, I think there needs to start being a detailed timeline. And that timeline needs to say, by this date, you're going to do X, Y, and Z. And by this date, you're going to do these things. Exactly. And we're going to have a non-nuclear peninsula within X amount of time. And that needs to be agreed upon by both countries.
You know, I got a call earlier in the show. You'd be surprised on a talk show people want to call in and ask. But the very question was asked about denuclearization and the breadth of it. Now, there hasn't been much public discussion that I've heard about South Korea. It's all been about North Korea. But is this a denuclearized peninsula at large or North Korea? And what about South Korea?
No, this is a denuclearized peninsula. I mean, at the end of the day, South Korea doesn't want to have nuclear weapons back. They've made that very clear. The country's made that very clear for a long time, unless they need them to defend themselves, whether they're using those as a way to deter or whether using those as a way to defend. But there has been no desire by the South Koreans to have nuclear weapons just for the sake of having nuclear weapons. North Korea, on the other hand, is using them much in the same way as Iran has used them.
So what about peaceful use of nuclear power? Is that even a possibility?
It is a possibility down the road, but I would say the first thing is you want to get this weapons capability cleared up and cleaned up, and then if you want to look at nuclear power down the road, that's fine. But step back for a second and think of yourself parked in the middle of North Korea. And now you say, you know what, we're going to get rid of this. What could possibly be the advantages to us? Well, if the nuclear weapons go away and you start having trade routes between South Korea going up through North Korea into China and into Russia, now you're building roads. And if you build roads, they have trucks on them. So now you have to have gas stations. Now you have to have hotels. And pretty soon,
this builds
up into a real economy. And it could happen very quickly, because if you look at the percentage of semiconductors, worldwide semiconductors that are made in South Korea, the technology base that's in South Korea, North Korea is just primed to be a great transportation hub between China and South Korea.
Part of that growth, is it easier because in some areas they literally have nothing?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, we're no longer dropping hard wire in the ground, the old AT&T days. Now it's microwave, it's, you know, microwave technology. It's easier to prefab, to bring in. I mean, you have to build the infrastructure of a country.
That's right. I mean, to me, I could very easily seeing it being one of the great investment possibilities in the near future if the nukes go away and things calm down in the Korean Peninsula.
So all of this timeline, this track, we're talking about years here. I don't think we're talking about the Trump administration this term, if he gets a second term. We're talking about years, but we're also talking about a generation. And communication can play a role in that. How important is it? And there's some trade between North and South Korea that goes on. There's some cross-border activity, let's call it that. But communication to the up-and-coming generation in North Korea. I mean, we've seen appeal and outreach to Iran, for instance, by this administration, by others in the past. But there hasn't been an action. North Korea and that generational change. Could that be a big factor, and if so, how?
Well, it is a big factor. Think of this. Every year on the anniversary of the signing of the armistice, the North Koreans put out a memo, and they do this every year, and they go on television, and it says, basically, the U.S.-led coalition failed, and we defeated them in, we defeated the U.S.-led imperialists. That's the exact words they will use. We defeated the U.S.-led imperialists. This year, for the first time, it says, we defeated the imperialists.
They took out
the U.S.-led in the statement this year. This is the first time that's happened in decades, maybe ever. And so that is a nuance, but it's a pretty significant nuance. And if this continues, what you end up with is a communication to the public through their leader saying, maybe these guys aren't the bad guys anymore. And maybe even if he's not coming out publicly and saying that, if he's just leaving it out, very soon you're going to have that transition.
You change the narrative, you leave it out, people start to change the way they perceive it, the way they see it.
So that trust building is very important. I mean, as you know, that's what we do at East West Institute. We do trust building, and that is what you have here. That trust building leads to conflict prevention.
Well, I like to think of you as the adult in the room.
Well, we like
you
as well.
In this room. That's good. Bill Parker, CEO of the East West Institute. Thanks for coming in, my friend.
Always good to be here. Thank you very much, Dave.
All right. Eastwest.ngo is the website. Some great stuff up there for you. What, 60 years now?
We're 37 right now.
Feels like 60.
It does.
I had some numbers.
It's a little bit going out.
All right. Give my best to Ambassador Munter.
Absolutely.
866-95-PATRIOT on Twitter at David Webb Show. Hello, this is